I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. It is Friday, so let's exhale for a moment, shall we, everybody? For the next 15 minutes, we're going to tell you the story of an extraordinary cultural exchange between an eccentric American rock star and the people of a communist country. I'm talking Frank Zappa and his fans in East Germany. Patrick Cox of our language podcast, The World in Words, is here. You're a big Zappa fan, aren't you, Patrick?
Marco, look, how can I resist something like this?
This is a song about vegetables. They keep you regular. They're real good for you.
Call any vegetable, yep, just don't call it late for dinner. What a career Zappa had, from those early days with the Mothers of Invention to recording with the London Symphony Orchestra to a whole bunch of, well, let's face it, raunchy, off-color, smutty songs that a lot of people remember him best for.
Yeah, it's true. Those smutty lyrics stuck with a lot of people. But I preferred the surreal stuff. You know, songs, they were about things that rock songs were not really supposed to be about, like plumbers or poodle dogs or
vegetables.
Communicating with vegetables. I have to admit, though, that I didn't really understand many of Zappa's lyrics, or at least the references when I first heard them. I'd never been to the United States. I was about 20. Never been anywhere close to Southern California, where Zappa grew up. So I didn't know where Laurel Canyon was, or Cucamonga, or Orange County, any of these places. I didn't even know what a Howard Johnson's was. That came up in one of his one of his songs. And I didn't know the difference between a real poncho and a Sears poncho.
So, I mean, you're going to tell us about Zappa and his relationship with East German music fans. But, I mean, as a native English speaker yourself, Patrick, you must have known at least more than they did.
I suppose I did. But I think that everybody who listened to Zappa without getting all of the stuff realized that he was deeply suspicious of mainstream American culture and also just as suspicious of the counterculture. Like, he constantly made fun of the hippies.
Hey, punk, where you going with that button on your shirt? Well, I'm going to the Love Inn to sit and play my bongos in the dirt.
And, you know, Marco, I was in Germany talking with a bunch of these old-timer Zappa fans who love music like this. One of those fans was Wolfhart Kutz. He's in his 60s now. He was spied on by the Stasi, the secret police of East Germany. But after German reunification, he had a chance to read his Stasi file, and this is what he found out.
I read that I have a tape recorder and a turntable and played a record. Also, I read that I'm a criminal beeinflusste, dekadente Jugendliche.
A criminal influenced, decadent young guy.
Young guy from the West propaganda, and I influence the young people with the music of Frank Zappa.
So he influenced, and the Stasi found, young people with the music of Frank Zappa. So what were people supposed to listen to in East Germany?
Well, the government didn't make it easy. They viewed that anything that came from the West as what Wolfhart says, as decadent, even early rock and roll. That was the first cultural clampdown, was when rock and roll came. And it was one of the first times the East German state started lying to its own people, just inventing stories. They targeted rock and roll loving youth in East Germany, calling them Texas boys, as if they were in some kind of gang or something, which they were not. And the guy who filled me in on this is a German cultural historian called Bodo Mrozek. And he told me about another really crazy East German invention.
They decided to create their own socialist dance.
A dance called the Lipsy, named after the city of Leipzig. The Lipsy was intended to replace rock and roll.
René Dubianski komponierte den Lipsy Nummer 1.
It's an overcomplicated, unsexy trudge. Everything that rock and roll isn't.
Peter Seifert aus der Messestadt Leipzig fand die Tanzschritte für dieses neue Kind der leichten Muse.
Who knows what was discussed in the meetings that came up with the Lipsy? But at some point, this was greenlit, a fake backstory for the dance.
In the lyrics, they introduced little narratives like Mr. Brown from USA visited the GDR and what he found was the Lipsy, so he brought back the Lipsy to Texas.
Wow, they really had a thing with Texas, eh? But what do you know? The Lipsy didn't take off.
East German youth mocked the stance and went through the streets by saying, we don't want the Lipsy and we want Elvis Presley and we want rock and roll.
But they didn't get that. They got the Berlin Wall.
The attention of an anxious world is focused on East and West Germany and Berlin.
1961, the wall went up with the intention of keeping the West out of the East and the East out of the West. And in many ways, it succeeded. The social upheavals of the 1960s and early 70s were far more muted in East Germany. East Germans, though, could hear music from the West on the radio, on West Berlin stations. The authorities couldn't jam all of it. And then there were teenagers like Wolfhard Kutz, whose Stasi report described him as a decadent young guy with a tape recorder.
When I was 17, I got from a friend a record of Frank Zappa, and the name of the record was Burnt Weenie Sandwich.
Burnt Weenie Sandwich. Kutz didn't have a clue what that meant. He barely spoke English at the time. You learned Russian at school. But he knew he needed to hear more. So he paid people to buy him Zappa albums in West Germany. He couldn't go there, but he knew people who could, like Vietnamese guest workers. Yeah, it sounds unlikely, but the Vietnamese came from a brother socialist land, and their visas allowed them to travel across the Iron Curtain. Also, elderly East Germans.
Retired people, they were allowed to go to West Germany. I gave them money with them, and they bought records.
Once smuggled into the East, Wolfhard's Zappa records did the rounds. He helped set up listening circles. These listening circles functioned like libraries, but with their own bespoke distribution systems.
A tape would be dangled out a window on a string. Someone would drive by on a bicycle and snatch it and pass it on to someone else.
This is Jim Cohen, an American and a huge Zappa fan who works as a translator in Germany.
And when the Iron Curtain came down, when the two Germanys were unified, one of the first things that this group of smugglers did is said, we're going to have a party, a concert, finally.
The idea was to make a party and to have fun. To have fun.
There are a lot of pictures of, there's probably about 60, 70 people, and they listened to some music, an East German rock band.
Every summer after that, these Zappa fans came together.
And had a good time, and it was stayed very small and familiar for about 10 years, until these fellows realized that what they were doing was in essence a grassroots rock festival, and that they had something that was special because it was not commercial.
That festival, Patrick, it's still going on today.
Yeah, I was there, and it's held every year now near the Baltic city of Rostock. It's called Zappanala, and Jim Cohen, the translator you heard there, he's an integral part of the festival now.
How is that? How does an American translator hook up with a bunch of former East German Zappa fans?
Well, Jim, he moved to West Germany several decades ago, and as I mentioned, he was a big Zappa fan, and he had also grown up in Southern California, very much Frank Zappa country. So he actually got all of those references in the lyrics to these obscure pop culture artifacts and TV commercials, that kind of thing. And it was something that the Germans around him absolutely didn't get. And Zappa was incredibly popular in West Germany at the time. He even had the odd top 40 hit there, one of which was a notoriously racy song called Bobby Brown.
Oh, yeah, Bobby Brown. Well, that would have made it on the radio in Germany. I'm not sure how one of his raunchiest would have made it onto the radio here in the U.S.
Yeah, and let's not play it here now. Jim's roommate liked to hum along to the tune of Bobby Brown, this top 40 hit. And one day, he asked Jim what the song was about, what the lyrics actually said.
When I told him about the bondage and discipline and the gender mixing going on in the song, he was just aghast. He was like, oh my God, that's terrible. And I thought, hey, this could be good.
Jim realized that Germans had a need he could fulfill.
That's really what made me think of annotating Zappa's lyrics for the Germans, is that even those who speak enough English to, you know, basically to understand what Zappa's writing, they don't know what he's really, really referring to.
And so began Jim Cohen's career as a cultural interpreter. He was the original rap genius, long before rap genius existed. He'd decided to stay in Germany. He was just getting going with his day job as a technical translator. It wasn't long until he had an evening gig, too, at a seedy Munich bar. There, he delivered boozy lectures about Frank Zappa songs. And over time, he realized that Zappa had long been perceived very differently in Germany. People thought of him as a protest-type performer, like Bob Dylan.
They expect Zappa to primarily be sort of this politician, poet, satirists of, and Zappa was indeed that to some extent, but he was also simply having a lot of fun.
In the late 90s, Jim Cohen approached Wolfhart Kutz, whose annual Zappa party had by then morphed into the small festival Zappanala. Kutz and his co-promoters said, yeah, come do your thing.
And it rained so that they basically shortened the festival and cut out my presentation. But I was lucky enough to see that they could maybe use some stage continuity, and so I managed to sort of weasel my way in as the stage MC.
Mit Kommunisten zu tun, und sie übt auch Hexerei aus.
At this year's Zappanala, Jim's a star. He's interpreting a song called Billy the Mountain, recorded by Zappa and the Mothers of Invention 46 years ago. There are perhaps a couple hundred people, mainly late middle-aged, packed inside a tent, listening to Jim as he prowls the stage in a 1950s plaid jacket, beer in hand. That's his lecture style. The song Billy the Mountain is a surreal story of a mountain called Billy who, you know, talks, and his sidekick, Ethel, who's a tree.
Billy was a mountain!
Billy was a mountain.
Ethel was a tree growing off of his shoulder.
Ethel was a tree growing off of his shoulder.
Jim tells his audience that Billy the Mountain is Zappa's take on the classic monster movie. Billy plays the role of the innocent monster, who nonetheless in this story destroys Edwards Air Force Base.
Edwards Air Force Base.
A place where Zappa's father once worked, but also poses for postcard photos and gets rich from the royalties. Much else happens, but Jim's talk is dominated by the cultural details. He has to explain what a grand jury is. Also references to a Jerry Lewis telethon, a Jack-in-the-Box restaurant, frozen beef pieces at a Boney's market, a Dudley Do-Right wristwatch, and a local car dealership that leases Cadillacs. I could go on. It's mind-boggling, and it takes more than 90 minutes. The audience loves it. Jim has them in the palm of his hand.
Oh, that's 2 minutes so good.
The musical acts at Zappanala are all off the beaten path, you might say, including several Zappa cover bands, a polka group from Austria, and a Japanese jazz rock ensemble. But the main act this year is Frank's son, Dweezil Zappa, his first appearance here.
Herzlich willkommen, Mr. Dweezil Zappa.
Jim introduces all of the performers, and he also does a Q&A with Dweezil inside an overpacked tent, heaving with the unwashed bodies, for many days unwashed bodies, of aging German Zappa fans.
Dweezil, there are rumors going around that you want to play for 3 hours, is that right?
If any place could tolerate 3 hours, it would be here at Zappanala.
For the East German old-timers here at the festival, the meaning of Zappa has evolved from those years under communism. Then they listened furtively, and they didn't fully comprehend what they were listening to. Nowadays, there's the internet, there's Google Translate, and there's Jim to explain what the lyrics are about. In between those times, there was that moment, something that many fans here talk about, that moment when you finally figured out,
wow,
what Zappa was actually singing about.
It's our black and dirty humor.
Black and dirty humor. Towards the end of Zappanala, I broach a sensitive subject with Wolfhart Kutz, the festival's founder. 10 years ago, the festival was sued by the Zappa Family Trust for copyright infringement. The trust didn't want them to use Zappa's name or likeness. A German court ultimately sided with Zappanala and against the family. It was a strange moment for Kutz, with his history of growing up a Zappa fan in an unfree society, especially, as he says, because it was from his idol that he learned how to stay just the right side of the law.
I liked how Zappa shows his protest in a manner with that he don't go or don't have or can't put in a prison.
Staying out of prison, it's more effective. It certainly helped Wolfhart survive totalitarianism. Better to be under the radar, an outsider. I tell Wolfhart I think he's still an outsider. He's running an event, that doesn't meet the approval of the official keepers of Frank Zappa's legacy. How does that feel, I ask it?
I feel good with that. I love to be an outsider. It's wonderful.
No, it's perfect, really. Just like Zappa himself, an outsider. You can hear much more on Frank Zappa in Eastern Europe in the latest World in Words podcast, including when Zappa got choked up at the hero's welcome he received in the Czech Republic after the Velvet Revolution. Quite a story. Check it out wherever you get your podcast, The World in Words, or at pri.org/language. Patrick Cox, thanks for telling us about this. Always great to talk about Zappa.
You're very welcome, Marco.
We are the other people. We are the other people. We are the other people. You're the other people, too. By the way to get to you. Do you think that I'm crazy? Out of my mind? Do you think that I creep in the night and sleep in a phone booth? Let me take a minute and tell you my plan. Let me take a minute and tell who I am.